I'll tell you when I get there. What really happens when we cross over?
Not what you might expect.
Tell me, what do we cross through? I felt as if I were getting lost again. There was a gleam in her eye now that I did not like, that promised damage.
I want you to think about something. You might be immune to hypnosis. You might. But what about the veil already in place? What if I removed that veil so you could access your own memories of crossing the border? The psychologist asked. Would you like that, little flame? Would you like it, or would you go mad?
If you try to do anything to me, I'll kill you, I said, and meant it. The thought of hypnosis in general and the conditioning behind it had been difficult for me, an invasive price to be paid in return for access to Area X. The thought of further tampering was intolerable.
How many of your memories do you think are implanted? The psychologist asked. How many of your memories of the world beyond the border are verifiable?
That won't work on me, I told her. I am sure of the here and now, this moment and the next. I am sure of my past. That was Ghostbird's Castle Keep, and it was inviolate. It might have been punctured by the hypnosis during training, but it had not been breached. Of this I was certain, and would continue to be certain, because I had no choice.
I'm sure your husband felt the same way before the end, the psychologist said.
I sat back on my haunches, staring at her. I wanted to leave her before she poisoned me, but I couldn't.
Let's stick to your own hallucinations, I said. Describe the crawler to me.
There are things you must see with your own eyes. You might get closer. You might be more familiar to it.
Her lack of regard for the anthropologist's fate was hideous, but so was mine.
What did you hide from us about Area X?
Too general a question.
I think it amused the psychologist, even dying, for me to so desperately need answers from her.
Okay, then, what do the black boxes measure?
Nothing. They don't measure anything. It's just a psychological ploy to keep the expedition calm. No red light, no danger.
What is the secret behind the tower?
The tunnel? If we knew, do you think we would keep sending in expeditions?
They're scared. The Southern Reach.
That is my impression.
Then they have no answers.
I'll give you this scrap. The border is advancing, for now. Slowly, a little bit more every year. In ways you wouldn't expect. But maybe soon it'll eat a mile or two at a time.
The thought of that silenced me for a long moment. When you're too close to the center of a mystery, there is no way to pull back and see the shape of it entire. The black boxes might do nothing, but in my mind they were all blinking red.
How many expeditions have there been?
Ah, the journals, she said. There are quite a lot of them, aren't there?
That doesn't answer my question.
Maybe I don't know the answer. Maybe I just don't want to tell you.
It was going to continue this way to the end, and there wasn't anything I could do about it.
What did the first expedition really find?
The psychologist grimaced, and not from her pain this time, but more as if she were remembering something that caused her shame.
There's video from that expedition, of a sort. The main reason no advanced tech was allowed after that.
Video? Somehow, after searching through the mound of journals, that information didn't startle me. I kept moving forward. What orders didn't you reveal to us?
You're beginning to bore me, and I'm beginning to fade a little. Sometimes we tell you more, sometimes less. They have their metrics and their reasons.
Somehow, the they felt made of cardboard, as if she didn't quite believe in them.
Reluctantly, I returned to the personal. What do you know about my husband?
Nothing more than you'll find out from reading his journal. Have you found it yet?
No, I lied.
Very insightful, about you especially.
Was that a bluff?
She'd certainly had time enough up in the lighthouse to find it, read it, and toss it back onto the pile. It didn't matter. The sky was darkening and encroaching, the waves deepening,
the surf making the shorebirds scatter on their stilt legs and then regroup as it receded. The sand seemed suddenly more porous around us. The meandering paths of crabs and worms continued to be written into its surface. A whole community lived here, was going about its business, oblivious to our conversation. And where out there lay the seaward border? When I had asked the psychologist during training, she had said only that no one had ever crossed it, and I had imagined expeditions that just evaporated into mist and light and distance. A rattle had entered the psychologist's breathing, which was now shallow and inconsistent. "Is there anything I can do to make you more comfortable?" Relenting. "Leave me here when I die," she said. Now all her fear was visible. "Don't bury me. Don't take me anywhere. Leave me here where I belong." "Is there anything else you're willing to tell me?" "We should never have come here. I should never have come here." The rawness in her tone hinted at a personal anguish that went beyond her physical condition. "That's all?" "I've come to believe it is the one fundamental truth." I took it to mean that it was better to let the border advance, to ignore it, let it affect some other, more distant generation. I didn't agree with her, but I said nothing. Later, I would come to believe she had meant something altogether different. Has anyone ever really come back from Area X? "Not for a long time now," the psychologist said in a tired whisper. "Not really." But I don't know if she had heard the question. Her head sagged downward, and she lost consciousness, then came to again and stared out at the waves. She muttered a few words, one of which might have been remote or demote, and another that might have been hatching or watching, but I could not be sure. Soon dusk would descend. I gave her more water. It was hard to think of her as an adversary the closer she came to death, even though clearly she knew so much more than she had told me. Regardless, did not bear much thought, because she wasn't going to divulge anything else. And maybe I had looked like a flame as I came near. Maybe that was the only way she could think of me now. "Did you know about the pile of journals?" I asked, "before we came here?" But she did not answer. There were things I had to do after she died, even though I was running short of daylight, even though I did not like doing them. If she wouldn't answer my questions while alive, then she would have to answer some of them now. I took off the psychologist's jacket and laid it to the side, discovering in the process that she had hidden her own journal in a zippered inside pocket, folded up. I put that to the side, too, under a stone, the pages flapping in the gusts of wind. Then I took out my penknife and, with great care, cut away the left sleeve of her shirt. The sponginess of her shoulder had bothered me, and I saw I had good reason to be concerned. From her collarbone down to her elbow, her arm had been colonized by a fibrous green-gold fuzziness, which gave off a faint glow. From the indentations and long rift running down her triceps, it appeared to have spread from an initial wound, the wound she said she had received from the crawler. Whatever had contaminated me, this different and more direct contact had spread faster and had more disastrous consequences. Certain parasites and fruiting bodies could cause not just paranoia but schizophrenia, all too realistic hallucinations, and thus promote delusional behavior. I had no doubt now that she had seen me as a flame approaching, that she had attributed her inability to shoot me to some exterior force, that she had been assailed by the fear of some approaching presence. If nothing else, the memory of the encounter with the crawler would, I imagined, have unhinged her to some degree. I cut a skin sample from her arm, along with some of the flesh beneath, and prodded it into a collection vial. Then I took another sample from her other arm. Once I got back to base camp, I would examine both. I was shaking a little by then, so I took a break, turned my attention to the journal. It was devoted to transcribing the words on the wall of the tower, was filled with so many new passages. But whether it decays under the earth or above on green fields, or out to sea, or in the very air, all shall come to revelation and to revel in the knowledge of the strangling fruit, and the hand of the sinner shall rejoice, for there is no sin in shadow or in light that the seeds of the dead cannot forgive. There were a few notes scribbled in the margins. One read, Lighthouse Keeper, which made me wonder if she'd circled the man in the photograph. Another read, North, and a third, Island. I had no clue what these notes meant, or what it said about the psychologist's state of mind that her journal was devoted to this text. I felt only a simple, uncomplicated relief that someone had completed a task for me that would have been laborious and difficult otherwise. My only question was whether she had gotten the text from the walls of the tower, from journals within the lighthouse, or from some other source entirely. I still don't know. Careful to avoid contact with her shoulder and arm, I then searched the psychologist's body. I patted down her shirt, her pants, searching for anything hidden. I found a tiny handgun strapped to her left calf and a letter in a small envelope folded up in her right boot. The psychologist had written a name on the envelope. At least, it looked like her handwriting. The name started with an S. Was it her child's name? A friend? A lover? I had not seen a name or heard a name spoken aloud for months, and seeing one now bothered me deeply. It seemed wrong, as if it did not belong in Area X. A name was a dangerous luxury here. Sacrifices didn't need names. People who served a function didn't need to be named. In all ways, the name was a further and unwanted confusion to me, a dark space that kept growing and growing in my mind. I tossed the gun far across the sand, balled up the envelope, sent it after the gun. I was thinking of having discovered my husband's journal, and how in some ways that discovery was worse than its absence, and on some level I was still angry at the psychologist. Finally I searched her pants pockets. I found some change, a smooth worry stone, and a slip of paper. On the paper I found a list of hypnotic suggestions that included induce paralysis, induce acceptance, and compel obedience, each corresponding to an activation word or phrase. She must have been intensely afraid of forgetting which words gave her control over us to have written them down. Her cheat sheet included other reminders like surveyor needs reinforcement and anthropologist's mind is porous. About me, she had only this cryptic phrase, silence creates its own violence. How insightful. The word annihilation was followed by help induce immediate suicide. We had all been given self-destruct buttons, but the only one who could push them was dead. Part of my husband's life had been defined by nightmares he'd had as a child. These debilitating experiences had sent him to a psychiatrist. They involved a house and a basement and the awful crimes that had occurred there. But the psychiatrist had ruled out suppressed memory, and he was left at the end with just trying to draw the poison by keeping a diary about them. Then, as an adult at university, a few months before he joined the Navy, he had gone to a classic film festival, and there, up on the big screen, my future husband had seen his nightmares acted out. It was only then that he realized the television set must have been left on at some point when he was only a couple of years old, with that horror movie playing. The splinter in his mind, never fully dislodged, disintegrated into nothing. He said that was the moment he knew he was free.